There was one question came in, and Megan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the website with all the evidence and the summary of evidence for the community guide is at thecommunityguide.org. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Thank you. Okay. Moving to the first question, Dr. Tan, one of our audience asked, well, how will the Affordable Care Act help students in college to get vaccinated?
So I think one of the things we want to, thank you for that, Dr. Strickas, for that question, and it's a good one. I think one of the things we want to remind folks is that the Affordable Care Act effective immediately mandates that insurance covers adult children through the ages of 26 years of age. So I think one way university children can be covered, obviously, is through their parents' health insurance. The other way, obviously, is that if their parents are uninsured or they don't have insurance, by 2014, university students will be eligible to obviously to participate in the state health insurance plans as well, the so-called state exchanges. But right now, I would advocate that university kids start looking at going through their parents' insurance plans.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Bridges, we received a question asking, will influenza requirements, I believe the viewer or the listener meant recommendations to those persons 65 and older, change because of recent reports, a recent literature review, I think in particular, that influenza vaccine may not be as effective in persons 65 or older as it is in younger people. Can you comment on that finding?
Thank you, Dr. Strickett. No, there are no plans to change any of the ACIP recommendations for influenza vaccine. It is well recognized that older adults do not respond as well to vaccines as younger healthy people. But older adults are at very high risk, particularly the very elderly, for severe complications from influenza, including hospitalization and death. And so even if the vaccine is less effective, it still remains a very helpful and beneficial intervention for older adults.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to, before I ask the next question, take a minute here. Several people have sent in that apparently I read too quickly, and they wanted the on-demand and verification codes for continuing education. I'll read them again, and you can get those off our website. But for the live session you're on now, it's WC1962. If you are viewing later on, you watch it again, it's WD as in David, the same number, 1962. The verification code is longer, the number 2, NIC as in National Immunization Conference, the letter O, 2012. Again, the number 2, NICO, 2012 is the verification code for continuing education. Megan Lindley, can I ask you, given standing orders are so powerful, and seem like they should be simple to implement, besides state barriers about who can give vaccinations, are there other barriers to implementation?
There are other barriers. As you saw in the slide that Carolyn presented, it's listed as a system intervention, which means that it is a big change. People, I think, who've successfully implemented standing orders have found that it's very important to have a physician who's an immunization champion, who feels comfortable, providing the authority to the non-physician providers to vaccinate. It's also important that the non-physician providers that will be assessing and administering the vaccines have a really good education about the vaccines themselves, for whom those vaccines are recommended, any potential contraindications or precautions, just so they can feel comfortable implementing those standing orders. And there may be some additional information on that website, which for those of you who weren't able to see it is www.immunizationed.org/standing orders.
Okay, thank you very much. Dr. Tan, there's someone out there who feels the same way I do. Isn't there some way to get rid of the Medicare Part B and Part D distinctions and put all the vaccines in Part B?
That's a great question, and there's a lot of minds that are better than mine that are working on it, and it's been difficult because the change that would be required to accomplish that is statutory. In other words, Congress would have to pass an act to change that, because right now three vaccines are statutorily placed in Part B, and that is influenza, pneumococcal vaccines, and hepatitis B vaccines, and that is by statute. All other adult vaccines are by statute in Medicare Part D as in dog. So I think one of the ways we want to look at this, obviously, is to try to eliminate some of the logistic administrative barriers to accessing vaccines in Part D. As we do that, we obviously want to continue to explore, finding our advocacy colleagues and partners on the to try to go ahead and make those statutory changes in the future. But again, that requires an act of Congress.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Bridges. A question came in that I'll read it verbatim. Is there ever a time someone could or should receive more than one dose of Tdap, which is presently approved for only one dose? And if one received a second dose because records were not available or some other problem in communication, would that be a problem?
Thank you, Ray. The current ACIP recommendations for adults only list receiving one Tdap vaccination as the recommendation. The ACIP is going to be taking up the issue of recommendations for repeated doses or booster doses in the next session. So I think there's more to come on that about the need for repeated doses of Tdap for adults.
Okay, thank you very much. Question for Megan Lindley, I have to find it. Question from a colleague in a local health department. Are you aware of any cities or states that have used public employees, I guess public health personnel, go out to homes and administer vaccines as part of a preventive health program?
Thanks, Ray. I am not aware of any state or local public health programs that have undertaken that intervention. What you can do if you're interested in seeing kind of the specific studies that the task force looked at is go to that website that Ray mentioned, the communityguide.org/vaccines. And usually what they'll have in addition to their summary recommendation is a paper or a list of the studies they've looked at. So you might be able to take a look at that and see if there are any of those interventions that were conducted from the local public health level.
Thank you. Dr. Tan, a questioner asks, are there any good resources, a cheat sheet, I love cheat sheets, that explain what Medicare covers and what it doesn't as far as vaccination and which parts of Medicare cover them?
That's a good question. I think the best thing to remember is Medicare covers all immunizations that are ACIP recommended. And the question, of course, is whether it covers it under Medicare Part B as in boy or Medicare Part D as in dog. So if it's an ACIP recommended vaccination for those over 65, Medicare covers it. So I think that's your cheat sheet. It's covered. The question is it a B or D coverage? B would be influenza, pneumococcal, and hepatitis B. And then anything else, all other adult vaccines for 65 and older are covered under Medicare Part D as in dog. So I hope I served as that cheat sheet, but if that's not enough, there are cheat sheets obviously on the Immunization Action Coalition website that I highly recommend. I think they have some information there as to what Medicare covers as well.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, Dr. immunize.org. Sorry.
Thanks very much. Dr. Bridges, follow-on question about influenza in older persons. Well, what about that high-dose vaccine? Isn't that a better product that we should be using in people 65 and older?
Thanks again, Ray. Good question. The high-dose vaccine is currently approved for people 65 years of age and older. And the data on immune response or antibody levels after vaccination suggests that vaccine has produces higher antibody levels than the standard dose. The information that is not yet available is whether the high-dose vaccine results in better protection clinically against influenza illness, and that data is pending. So at this time, ACIP does not make any distinction or any preference for high dose versus standard dose for patients 65 and older, and we're all anticipating and hoping to see the data soon from the clinical trials in older adults comparing the high dose to the standard dose.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's all the time we have for questions. There is one note from Amanda Stone in Massachusetts. She notes that they have had experience with public health nurses going to do home visits, so the person who asked about home visits may want to reach out to Amanda in Massachusetts. Let me thank our presenters, Dr. Carolyn Bridges, Megan Lindley, and Lijin Tan, for a terrific session, and we hope you tune in to the rest of the conference. Thank you, everybody.